You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 549, I think. At any rate, and more. What's going on? What's happening?
Back
Is this six?
away.
Is this 649? Is this 649? It's 649, isn't it?
Yeah, because the next one's the big one.
Yeah. Well, we might be doing a 649.5. We'll see.
Just like, no, it'll be good. All the different parts. Yes.
Joanne, what's happening? What's going on?
I am back from the city officially. And
are you happy or sad?
Mixed emotions. Because it's nice, you know, it's a good environment, and then it kind of turns on you, and you kind of turn on it. It's an interesting dynamic, I think, because it's great, and there's so many positives, and there's so many negatives, and there's so many pros, and there's so many cons, and I don't know, like, when you're not in the city, when you're in the city, you take it, as it is. When you're out of the city, sometimes you glorify it and you take it as it is. And it's the same when you're like in a rural area. Sometimes you glorify it, sometimes you take it as it is. It's just, I don't know, it's an interesting thought experiment, monitoring your moods and emotions and how your environment changes it for the better, for the worse. But again, how much of it can be associated with your environment, you know? It's interesting. It's a real study. We had a zucchini, though, that was the size of my cat. Actually, it's a little bigger than the cat, so that was pretty cool.
Well, there you have it. Emma's growing zucchinis and kicking it around in the big city. Let's see. So kind of an interesting week news-wise of Punk News this week. One of my favorite stories ever has resurfaced. Billy McFarland is launching Firefest 2. As you recall, Firefest 1 was the festival it was the premium festival. I think was it Ja Rule? Who was the other person on Firefest? It was Ja
Rule.
I'm
pretty sure it was Ja Rule.
And so it was like a premium festival in the Caribbean that you had to spend like $5,000 or $7,000 to go to. And all the bands pulled out essentially, and it was so bad that they literally had to airlift people out of the Bahamas to get them away from the festival that was so poorly planned. It was so bad that Billy McFarland was actually charged with fraud related to convincing banks that they had certain investments and certain plans that they did not. And he actually went to jail for a couple of years. And probably my favorite part is that he was convicted of other crimes committed while he was out on bail after he was charged with the first Firefest crimes. That is, while he was out on bail, he was calling attendees from Firefest 1 and saying, hey, do you want to go to dinner with LeBron James, or do you want to go to the Met Gala dinner, and selling tickets that he didn't actually have the tickets for. And so he was convicted of fraud twice.
Oh, my God.
So he went to jail for a while, and then now he's out. He actually got out just about a year ago, and now he's launching Firefest 2. And he hasn't announced the date. He hasn't announced the acts. He hasn't announced where it's going to be, but it's going to be somewhere in the Caribbean in 2024. The first round of tickets were $500 each, and then each round of tickets goes up in price till it gets to $8,000 total. Apparently, the initial round of tickets has sold out. Now, a lot of people feel that's all a hype thing, and he didn't actually sell those tickets. On one hand, I can't believe that as part of his sentence, he wasn't allowed to organize music festivals anymore. I would have thought that if your music festival is so bad that you get charged with crimes, then I would think that the judge would ban you from throwing music festivals, but I guess not here. So on one hand, I'm kind of surprised that it did sell out, but on the other hand, if it did sell out, but on the other hand, I'm sort of like, well, there's a lot of really rich, stupid 20-somethings that have a ton of money, and maybe they're just buying tickets ironically or something. And more, would you go to Firefest 2? Would you buy tickets to Firefest 2? Is Firefest 2 actually going to take place? And or is Firefest 2 literally just a long or short-term scheme for Billy McFarland to make a bunch of money and then not throw a festival? And all, like, can you imagine the chutzpah of him actually trying to throw a festival after he failed? His festival failed greater than any other music festival has ever failed ever, because I believe it's the only time someone has been convicted of a crime for trying to throw a music festival. So he's failed harder than anyone else ever. So is this some kind of long-range scheme or something?
Oh, it has to be, right? Like, it has to be. That video announcement or whatever, he's like, I came up with this after 7 months in solitary confinement. And the first thing, I think, was a production company. And the second thing was a Broadway musical based on Firefest 1. And then it was this, like, the second round of the festival. It just seems like one, like, you do something once that's really bad that everyone talks about, so everyone knows you, and then you try to capitalize off of it for the rest of your life. This is what it's at, what this feels like. And 100% this thing's not going to happen. Like, there's not even a specific place. It's the Caribbean. Do you know how big the Caribbean is? Like, it's massive. You know, you couldn't pinpoint one place. You couldn't do any of this. The prices are absolutely ridiculous. I don't know anyone who can afford to go to this, because it's something that's not probably not going to happen. You're probably going to have to, like, you know, there's going to be a repeat of the first one. Like, oh no, we're going to get airlifted out. What if that's the thing? What if the second one is just like the sequel? You know, like, oh, you know what you're signing up for. The first one was you get a piece of bread and a piece of cheese and maybe a couple pieces of lettuce or whatever, and then that's it. What if this time it's you get half of a piece of bread and, like, a quarter of a cheese, and it's just, like, the sequel, you know? All of playing all the hits, but worse. It just seems really, really stupid. Like, why would you give this person your money after everything that's happened? Like, everything that's happened. How can you trust this person enough to give them your money? You can't. It's ridiculous. It's a waste of time, waste of funds. Do you know how many zucchini you can buy for that much? Lots.
A lot of zucchini. I'm not sure that it actually is. I mean, it's a scam in that I'm sure whatever you get, if you get anything, it's not going to be worth what you paid for. I thought what was really interesting is in his announcement video, he wasn't like, I mean, when we, not that Punk News are the master promoters of all time. All right, let's use Riot Fest.
Sure.
Very well respected festival.
Yes.
They usually have cool bands, and a lot of people go. Their perspective is, come to Riot Fest. You'll get to see Danzig doing all of Danzig 1. You'll get to see Blink 182 reunited. You'll get to see The Descendants. Won't you have a lot of fun? It's going to be a lot of fun. You'll have a good time. Come to Riot Fest, you know? Whereas if you watch his announcement video, it wasn't you'll have a good time at all or you anything. It was all, I've been working really hard. Mm-hmm. I got this idea. I've planned this out. I've put all my time into this. There wasn't anything in there as to what me, the consumer, or a person that appreciates art and your music, why should I go? It was literally all about him, you know. And now from a normal promoter standpoint, that's psychopathic, because no one cares about the promoter. I will concede that he is somewhat of a media figure, and he's one of these media figures that kind of developed in the late 90s, early 2000s, whereas he's a hated media figure that people love to follow, kind of like Paris Hilton kind of developed, frankly, or even the Kardashians when they first were around. And then they kind of flipped the script, interestingly. Anyway, the point being is, I think he's sociopathic in that, like, he truly doesn't understand why – not that he doesn't understand. He thinks everyone loves him, and he thinks – people want him to win, and if people don't like him, it's just because they're jerks and they don't understand how great he is. And I do think he's a sociopath in that perspective, or under that definition. And I don't necessarily, and I think he truly believes that he can do a big, huge festival. Even if people are buying tickets, ironically, I really can't imagine anyone, not anyone, I can't imagine more than a few hundred jokers spending money to go to this thing. I mean, look at Destination Chaos. Very cool lineup.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
Failed horribly, you know? So, and I don't think they were in it for any, what's what I'm looking for, morally wrong reasons. They certainly wanted to make money, but I don't think they had bad intent. Whereas I think Billy McFarlane does have bad intent, and he is kind of a jerk. Well, he's a real jerk. And I like I said, I think he's a sociopath, because while he was charged with crimes, he went out and committed more crimes as if he wouldn't get caught right away. And he did, thankfully. So I think he's a sociopath. I think he thinks he can throw a festival and it'll be a big, huge success because he's great and everyone wants him to win, and people that don't want him to win don't understand how great he is. And I think it's going to fail horribly. And I think there's a distinct possibility that he might get charged with crimes again, which would be hilarious. I'm surprised that there's no one in his world that is saying, Billy, don't do this, man. It's not a good idea. Another question is, where's he getting all this money from? Because these kinds of festivals cost millions of dollars to throw. Presumably, he lost a ton of money on Firefest.
Yeah.
So, where's he getting all this money from?
Other scams. I don't know. I
I
don't know
like his.
anything about him.
Maybe he's got like a rich dad.
So, like,
I
he is.
he's only 30 years old. That's pretty impressive.
Wait, are you serious?
I
He's
like
only 30 years old?
he's only 30. So when Firefest One, he
Oh.
was only like 20. I don't know. So on Firefest One, he defrauded investors of $27 million.
A lot of money.
See, his parents are real estate developers, so his parents probably have a lot of money. But you think his parents would
Gaia.
be like, you know what? You know what? Don't do this again, because So, anyways, well, I can't wait to see what happens. I mean, maybe this is all some kind of big gag, but I mean, he's going to jail for selling tickets that don't exist. You think he'd
Yeah.
be particularly careful about that now? You know what I mean? But
Unless it's like, this is what I'm known as. This is my calling card.
I think the only explanation is that he's sociopathic and that he truly doesn't understand why the world doesn't love him and he thinks he's doing something right, even though it's objectively and subjectively wrong and messed up. Anyway, I can't wait to see how this wraps up. It'll be great. Here's something that is cool though and great. Well, Devo is going on tour, and they've said this tour will be their last, I guess, sadly. If the listeners might know, a couple of weeks ago, Em and I saw a news article that said it might be their last tour, but things seem to be conflicting as to whether or not it will or will not be Devo's last tour. Well, it is Devo's last tour. It's called Farewell Tour, celebrating 50 years of de-evolution. I saw Devo Punk Rock Bowling, two Punk Rock Bowlings ago. They were absolutely amazing. I will say, from the punk end side of things, we have got to update this picture. This picture is from like the 90s, man. We have got to update this picture.
Oh, whoops.
And more, are
Yes.
you sad that Devo's ending? And are you shocked that Devo's ending?
Well, I've never had the pleasure of seeing Devo, but they're one of those bands that's you always think like they're never going to stop. They're going to be on the road forever, you know? So like it was kind of surprising, but at the same time, it's like they've put so many years into touring. They've put on so many shows. They've played so many different places. They're all getting, you know, older, and touring might be more difficult now based on lots of different factors. So, and in the when they announced like it was their final tour, it was in an interview with The Guardian, and there was a quote that was Devo or playing live as part of Devo's DNA, and just you could feel in the interview how all the members like felt like the decision was in one way needed to happen, but they're bummed that it has to happen, you know? But it's good to see them still call it and still like on their own terms, like be like, you know what? We've had a really good run. We will miss this, but we're calling it on our own terms, where we're really giving everything that we possibly can on the stage for the last time that we know we'll be able to do this in rapid succession, like in a touring thing. I do think that after this, they probably will, and again, I don't know for certain, but they might, you know, play the odd like festival date, or they might do something like that. If they do, that's great. If they don't, I mean, they've done this for the majority of their lives. They've had a great run, and I think it's a good way to call it.
Yeah, Devo was awesome live when I saw him. They are getting kind of older, so it's probably not super surprising they're wrapping it up. From what the interviews that I've read, it seems like there's a little bit of a mixed emotions. Although what a lot of bands do these days is to say, "Oh, we're not going on tour anymore." who were playing festivals, which were band like Devo, who don't really tour that much anyway. Mostly do festivals, not that big of a change, you know.
Oh,
So
yeah, for sure.
did they say they're not touring anymore, or they're not playing shows anymore, you know?
Touring. I believe it was touring.
Yeah, so I think
Yeah.
yeah, no, but then Gerald Casale says, I'm in denial because I love performing and I'll hate to see it go. That's like you're not playing live at all anymore. So, but they didn't say how long it's going to be. So we'll see. If you can get a chance to see Devo, then you should definitely go see them. Speaking
Yeah.
of another band that's ending, NOFX have released a video for Darby crashing your party. NOFX is on their farewell tour right now. The video shows, and I thought it was like a gag video, but it kind of appears to be real. In the video,
Yeah.
NOFX, well, it's Fat Mike's house or one of his houses, and the other members of NOFX come over his house and destroy his house with some other random people. And I thought it was like a gag, but then like near the end, they show like a backhoe. El Jefe's driving a backhoe, and they're destroying what appears to be an actual house. Unless it's some giant prop, or unless it's some other random house, but it really looks, I mean, it looks like a real house to me, you know? And
Oh, yeah.
so I've got a lot of questions here. Well, it doesn't look that big, actually. I would think that Mike would have a bigger house. And look, it looks like it's out on some prairie or something, not in LA. So maybe it's just this, maybe they bought some old house in the middle of like Sacramento or something. At any rate, but then at the end it says RIP Flog House, which I guess, or Six Flogs, which I
Yeah.
guess was Fat Mike's house. Maybe is that his house like out in the Arizona desert or something? I don't know where Six Flogs was. So at
Wasn't
any
that
rate,
the Wasn't that the one where
oh, what's
Weekend at
that?
Fatty's was? Wasn't that the
Yeah,
one where
where
he
was
like
that
had
at?
his festival? I think it was
I
in,
think you're
wasn't it in
right.
California somewhere?
Let's see. I'm Googling that real quick. Mike's backyard, yeah, but he's got a couple. I mean, I know he's got a house in Arizona. This might be his house in LA. You know, I don't know. So I wonder, like, A, I'm sure that NOFX record sales wise aren't making enough money to buy a house in LA or wherever, right? But like maybe, but Fat Mike has pretty deep pockets, and we're gonna get to the song in a second. But I'm astounded that they would destroy a house for a music video. So maybe he's like building another house. So he realized here's an opportunity, and that like I'm gonna tear this house down anyways. So let's make a music video out of it. That's the only thing I can guess. Otherwise, I
Yeah.
can't imagine him blowing, you know, any house in California. Unless you're in the middle of nowhere, we're talking 400 stars up to millions, of course. I can't imagine that one video is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, but maybe he's building another house anyway, so this was just kind of a gag. What do you think's going on here, and what do you think of the song?
Well, I think that the video was 100% like just a gag. Like, I think he is tearing down the old house and is gonna like rebuild it because there's barely any furniture in the house. There's like nothing that's everything looks like it's been moved out. Everything looks like it's, you know, kind of run down a little bit. Like maybe it hasn't been used for a couple months. Maybe like it just looks different without furniture in it because a lot of houses do. So I think if there's furniture in it and they were destroying it, then it'd be like, you know, it'd be a little more suspect. But I think this was a planned demolition, and I agree. I think it was, well, we're gonna do this anyway. Like we might as well like have some fun with it because the band is coming to a close after 40 years. That's what they're celebrating at the beginning of the video before they start tearing shit down. So maybe like it's just that, like, there's a lot of memories attached to this house. There's a lot of memories attached to this band. So, why not tear it down together while we're celebrating kind of 40 years? That's how I took it. And, like, you know, have fun with it. Like, they're tearing stuff down. They have like some of their friends come in. Like, I think it was Jay is in there and he was in Backstage Passport. He's one of the techs. There's like jokes, there's all sorts of stuff. I think too, maybe the video was like Fat Mike sort of not necessarily making amends because that's not the wording I want to use, but kind of like allowing himself to get kind of poked fun at just after all the stuff in the 40 years that maybe has caused some resentment and everything. I think it was the band letting off a lot of steam too. Maybe with each other, maybe just with everything again that builds after 40 years, maybe just we had great memories and we want to end this chapter and make it a really good memory too, or make it something fun, make it something we can look back on and laugh. Getting rid of a house is pretty emotionally heavy, so maybe that was the other reason to, bring in friends, make it funny, so then when it does go, it's not as emotional because you have a good memory of it going, like you're putting it to rest the way that you want it to be. So those are my thoughts on the video. I thought the video was kind of fun and cool and stuff. The song was kind of an afterthought. I know it's on an album they just released, but I was watching the video, so I'm like, I'm watching the video, and every time I'm watching it, like there's more stuff I'm kind of noticing and stuff popping up. Like there's a flyer wall, there's all these cool things and whatever, and all these little gags, and then there's like some tie-ins with like stuff they talk about in the book that's like in the video and all these things. So I was kind of more focused on the visuals, and the song was just there as a backdrop. But yeah, the name of the song is kind of fun. But I didn't really dive into the song. John, what's your take?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you one thing. I mean, I listened to the video and I watched the video. I couldn't tell you one thing about the song. I think the pun is forced, like a lot of no effects. I mean, puns are generally bottom of the barrel, if you ask me. The song itself is fine, okay. I mean, I don't love NoFX. I don't hate NoFX. I think Fat Mike does a lot of interesting creative things, but I think a lot of them never really pay off. That is like, this is not like, well, actually, I think the video is interesting. I'm like, why are they destroying this house? Is this real? And I was trying to figure out, like, why is NoFX beating him up and destroying the house? I thought it was what's caused he's choosing to end NoFX because, the word kind of is that he's the only one that wants to end NoFX and the other guys don't really want to. So I thought it was that, but I think maybe an arguable critique of the video is that, like, it's not really clear as to why the guys of NoFX are beating him up. You know what I mean? So maybe that should be a little more clear. I have no idea. As always, Fat Mike does provocative, interesting art. I just never, often, not always, it doesn't quite pay off. One example where it does pay off was the whole Cokie the Clown thing, which I think was one of the greatest punk gags ever, and it was super clever. But then, like, things like this, or things like I'm trying to think of some other stuff that he's like. The whole orchestral thing, it's daring and it's interesting and it's provocative, but does it pay off? Is it really that interesting to actually listen to? Maybe not so much. So, but at least he's always trying to do interesting things for sure. Speaking of a band that's always doing interesting things, the Melvins are going on tour with Boris and is it Helms Ali, I believe. I think it's Twins of Evil tour. I think it's Helms Ali. Or no, Mr. Phils. That's Mr. Phils, not Helms Ali. So anyway, it's Boris Melvins and Mr. Phils. And annoying to me, well, Boris is doing all of Heavy Rocks. Melvins are doing all of Bullhead and some other tracks. And I think Mr. Phils is a relatively new band, so they're just playing some stuff. Annoying to me is Boris is headlining, which I think is total bullshit because they're named after a Melvins song, and the whole idea of the band came from the Melvins. But I think the Melvins don't have a whole lot of ego, so I don't think they really care where they play. Actually, I think they like playing. What I've recently come to learn, which is kind of interesting, is not all bands want to headline or want to be the final act. Like sometimes a band wants to be the second lead headliner because there's less pressure. If you rock the
Oh,
house,
sure.
people remember it. But if you suck, then people kind of forget, and you get to end up you get to close up shop early as opposed to staying up till 2 a.m. This was kind of surprising me, but more and more bands I'm realizing don't mind being the supporting headline here. I think from a strictly honor thing, I think Melvin's definitely be the headliner. But what can you do? Boris in the States, because Boris doesn't play the States very much and Melvin's play a lot, Boris may very well have a somewhat of a larger draw than the Melvin's. But at any rate, Dale Crover for the first time ever since joining the band will not be on the Melvins tour. Instead, it's the drummer is going to be Cody Willis, who was also drummed for the Melvins during the Big Melvins era, when it was Buzz on guitar, Jarrett on bass, Dale on drums, and Cody also on drums when the Melvins had two drummers at the same time. So this time it's going to be Dale, Steve McDonald of Red Cross, and Cody on drums. The first Melvins tour ever since Dale joined the band where Dale will not be drumming. Dale's getting emergency spinal surgery. Hopefully Dale gets better soon and gets back behind the kit. That's a bummer, and I'm sad that Dale's getting surgery and that he needs it. So I hope he recovers quickly. That being said, I don't think you could think of a better person to pick behind the kit. Cody's already been a drummer for the Melvins, and we're going to get a very unique Melvins lineup. Buzz, Steve McDonald, and Cody. That lineup has never existed in the Melvins before, although they've all been in the Melvins before. I guess it's kind of annoying because they're doing a Melvins classic album that Dale drummed on, so I would love to hear Dale drum on that classic album. That being said, this is going to be a real cool lineup, and I'm definitely going to go, and I'm excited to see the change up, the mix up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I hope Dale has a quick and complete recovery. Spinal surgery sounds like it's rough. Hope he gets better
and
soon.
Who's the drummer for My Chemical Romance?
Currently, I'm not sure because they've
like
gone through
band?
A couple. Oh, yeah, they've gone through a couple drummers, though. I don't know who their drummer was.
You don't know
on
the
their
drummer
last
of your
tour,
favorite
though,
band, Em?
Because they went through a bunch of drummers. there's drummer
oh, is
drama,
it?
John.
Oh, I see. Jared Axelrod. He's actually not even in the band. He's a touring drummer. All right.
Yeah.
Em, would you go see My Chemical Romance if Frankie Iero wasn't there and they had someone else?
Oh, yeah. I go see them.
Really?
Yeah,
would you go
like,
see My Chemical Romance if Gerard Way wasn't there and it was someone else?
You know what? Yeah, I'd give him a go. I give him a go.
Would you go see My Chemical Romance if Gerard Way wasn't there and Frank Iero wasn't there?
If they're both not there, well, okay. Because the thing is, if Gerard Way is not there and Frank Iero is, he can do a lot of like the vocals and kind of cover that. If they're both not there, Mikey's super talented, Ray's super talented. I think they could fill in with like friends and it would be a really cool show.
Would you go if Gerard Way wasn't there, Ray wasn't there, Mikey wasn't there, and Frank wasn't there?
No, because at that point it's just a cover set.
Well, Jared Axelrod's going to be there, Em, and so is Jamie Muhabarek.
Oh. I think
you,
I'd have
you,
to pass
you,
on
you
that
see,
one.
you,
But
you, you
they're
don't
very
want to see the
talented
keyboard
people.
styling of, you don't want to see the keyboard styling of Jamie Muhabarek, who has also played keys in All American Rejects, Fleetwood Mac, Bob Dylan, Backstreet Boys, Rolling Stones, Genesis,
holy,
Eric
that
Priz, Pet Shop Boys, Jane's Addiction, Avenged Sevenfold, Sum 41, Joe Cocker, John Mayer, Frontline Assembly, Kid Harpoon, I have no idea who that is. And Was Not Was? You don't want to go see that, Em?
I'm sure very, very, very talented, but I don't know. You know what?
You
Yeah.
Know that his
Let's
dad
just
was
say.
Larry Muhubarak. You do know that his dad was Larry Muhubarak, who played keyboards in Elvis Presley's band. You know that, Em, right?
Ooh, I know that now. I didn't know that before. Knowledge is power.
Well, with Em admitting that she hates My Chemical Romance
no.
because she won't go see them if they're missing a couple of members.
A
let's
couple
play
of
some
members.
Melvins. This goes out to, let's see, let's play a track from Bullhead. This goes out to Dale Crover, who plays on this album. Let's play, I know what we should play. Let's play Boris, the song by the Melvins off Bullhead, which the band Boris took their name from, even though they're headlining over the Melvins. Even though the Melvins probably don't care. And we're back, and here's a fun story. The B-52s are hosting an art exhibit, and the kicker is that the paintings are created by apes, or chimps, rather. Is an ape a chimp? I don't even know, actually. What's the difference between an ape and a chimp?
Ooh, I used to know this. Wait.
Oh, a chimp is a chimpanzee. But I think a
Yeah.
chimpanzee is not an ape. Is a chimpanzee an ape? I don't know.
Give me a minute.
Because
Let's see.
chimpanzees don't have tails, right? And apes don't have
Yeah.
tails.
So,
Chimpanzee is a great ape. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
yeah. No, that's what I found too.
Well, we solved it. There we go. Anyways,
Yeah.
so B-52 is always up to something wild and wacky and always doing something kind of cool.
Yeah.
They have apes painting
Apes.
B-52 album covers, and it's for Save the Chimp Sanctuary, who have rescued
Ooh.
apes from labs and the entertainment industry. That's going to be at the Punk Rock Museum August 25 to September 1, and you can see a video of the apes painting at Punk News right now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And more. This is fun and wild and wacky. Do you agree?
Oh, hell yeah, this rocks. This is so cool. It's a great cause, and the video of the apes painting, they just look so happy and like they're just having a great time, and it's a lot of fun. And the B-52 is like talking about the album or talking about like the art that was made would just be an absolute blast. Like, I'm seeing no downsides for this. I would 100% go if I was in the area. It'd be like, hell yeah, today is Ape Day. You know, I don't know price point wise how like much paintings would be, but they go to a really good cause. So I try to, you know, bring someone who has some cash. Be like, go
On
support
it,
the
I support the chimps.
chimps.
I agree that there is no downsides whatsoever, and
Yeah.
anybody that doesn't like this is got to be a huge dick.
Oh,
This is really
100%.
cool and really fun. I
Yeah.
would like to buy an ape painting, but I gotta say I think probably some super rich guy would come along and buy them just because they are unique and just trying to show how altruistic he is. And I can't complain about that. If these paintings go for $50,000 each and it helps out apes, I'm all about it. It would be cool to
100%.
have one of these, but it's probably cost a lot of money. But anyway, this is a, they are selling prints too, but somehow a print just isn't quite the same as a painting. At any rate, very cool and it's rad. M, tell us about Half Past Two.
Yes, well, Half Past Two, we've talked a little bit about them on the podcast. They are a ska punk band, and they've just released a new song called You in a Suit. It's a very quick song. It's under 2 minutes. It's very upbeat. There's a small little spot near the end that kind of slows down a little bit, and then it gets upbeat again. It's very ska punk, and it's really cute and it's nice. And you know, it's about like having a crush and becoming friends with a well-dressed person at a show, and it's really nice. It's always so cool to see people like dress up for shows because it's like, oh my gosh, like that's so cool. It means so much to you. You know, wanted to do something a little bit different. That's really neat. Seen some like so many cool like outfits at shows. Like the My Chemical Romance show is like crazy because everyone's like absolutely decked out and stuff. But there's something about ska and people in suits that just goes like hand in hand. So I thought it was really nice. It was kind of funny because I'm listening to it and it's like, oh, this is so nice. This is so cool and everything. And it was at ska shows, there's always that one person dressed like a banana. And I was just like, what if this was a song about the banana suit? You know? Because it's never specified what type of suit it is. But anyway, I think it's a regular, like, three-piece, like, suit. But yeah, it's fun. I like it. It's my favorite song by them, I think, right now, at least. John, what did you make of Half Past Two's new track?
Oh, I agree. It is my favorite song by them right now. I think the song is fun. I mean, it's a third wave ska kind of track, and it's fast and
You can dance to it. You can real skank to it. You can do all sorts of stuff. It's great.
kind of zane, kind of wacky, and I dig it. Am you there?
Yep, are you there? Are you back?
Am you there?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know if you heard what I said. Is it,
Nope.
I agree that I do. I agree that it, I think it is the best song by Half Past Two right now. I really like the cover that's got Michelangelo's David in a suit, which I think is funny.
Yeah.
You mentioned the person in the banana suit, and what's your opinion of the person in the banana suit at the Ska show?
I think it's just a fun thing. I don't know how it started. I don't know what the history behind it is, but it's just kind of fun. And every time I see it, I just smile. It's just fun. What's your banana
You,
suit perspective?
I don't know. I mean, my perspective, I'm trying not to be, a curmudgeon, but often the person in the banana suit is being a little too wacky. They're kind of bumping into everybody
Oh,
and
fair
they're
enough.
saying, "Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me." It's like, I don't want to look at you, but no, look at me, I got a banana suit. So I tend to get annoyed at people in look at me type clothing, but maybe I'm being a curmudgeon. Maybe I'm wrong.
Would you
Let's
ever
see
wear
here.
a
Oh,
banana
okay.
suit to a show?
Is it to like save somebody's life or something?
No, just for fun. Just like
No. No. The only reason I would ever wear a banana suit anywhere was to like save somebody's life. And even then it's got to be like they'll definitely die. Like if it's like, oh, they broke both their legs. I'm like, well, they're going to have to risk it. You know what I mean? But like no, I would never wear a banana suit. Never.
Oh, that's funny.
Even when I used to go see World Inferno a lot back in the day, I
Yes.
didn't wear a suit or anything because A, well, even when I got in the World Inferno, when I first got in the World Inferno, that era was still there, but it was fading out, that era of the band. But also, like the people that like wore the suits to like World Inferno, it's I don't it felt like too much like dress up to me, not real. Even though I also wear a suit in my normal life. Anyways, I don't know, man. Lars Fredrickson, M. He's going to be in a horror movie. The horror
Oh.
movie is called The After Dark, and it looks
Ooh.
like it's not exactly clear what's going on it, but it looks like a bunch of zombies invade a punk
I think they're
bar venue.
vampires.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're totally
Yeah.
well. Yeah, you're right. And so it looks to be pretty low budget. The sound quality and the cinematography looks to be pretty low budget, and the level of acting looks to be pretty low budget. And it looks to be pretty grimy. And at first I'm like, this is stupid. I hate this. This is cheesy and bad and not well done. But then I realized I was being a curmudgeon. Here's why. One of the commenters said, oh, yeah, this is funny. Goddamn actor strike. I've seen tampon commercials with better acting and production than this trailer, which is true. But then someone in the comments says, let's see here. Give me a second. Oh, here we go. I hope that this is funny too. I hope they can recoup the hundreds of dollars they spent on this. But in all, I probably check it out when it's released. Big Hollywood studios aren't going to make cool punk movies, so I'm glad somebody is doing it. And you know what? Very true. Very
Yeah.
true. No one else is doing it, so at least they're doing something. So would I spend money to go see this? Maybe. If nothing else cooler was going on, that's my answer. I don't think Lars is central to this in any ways. I think he's just doing it because it's
No.
kind of a fun, and he's probably in like one scene. That being said, could it be a fun B film? Yes. Do I love fun B films? Not really, everyone else does, so maybe I should. But my opinion is, why would I watch a film that's known for being bad when I could watch a good movie? Well, on the other hand, I did go see both Danzig films, and I do enjoy The Room and films like that. So I don't know. I mean, it looks kind of fun. I would go see it, I think. But honestly, if Lars was in it, I probably would not go see this. M, if Lars was not in this, would you go see it?
Yeah.
You would?
I think so. I think it's obviously very low budget and it's probably not going to be the best thing, but there is something about horror and punk that just goes together so well, and anytime like there's any type of crossover, I don't, and it's usually like B movies, usually super campy. It's super like all this kind of stuff. So it's like there is definite potential for this. I love B movies. I love kind of stuff like that. It's so good. And this looks, this isn't my top punk horror movie that's coming out that I want to see. The top one that's coming out is Amityville NATO, which is like directed by Duck of Joystick. I really want to see that one. But this one I will definitely watch when it hits a streaming service or something, because I want to see what it's about. I want to see how they do it. I want to see what bands are in it. I want to see what songs they use. I want to see what, like, just what's going on and what direction they take it, because there's some like absolutely stellar punk horror movies, like Green Room, that came out a couple years ago with Patrick Stewart, and it
You're right.
is
There's green room, but what else?
Night of the Living Dead, not Night of Return of the Living Dead.
Hmm.
The one where they're in the graveyard and there's the punk zombies. I'm pretty sure it's Return of the Living Dead.
I think it is. I've never seen that film. It is
It's
Return of the Living Dead.
yeah, it's good. And then like there are things that I kind of classify as like a punk rock horror movie, but I don't think necessarily would be. Like, I think that ooh, what are you, well, okay, technically you could say that Jennifer's Body is a punk rock horror movie because it's a band that turns her into the demon, and that's Fall Out Boy. So you could argue that, but I'm just trying to think of like other like that are really central. Well, okay, you could class not necessarily like the punk subculture or anything, but more the punk ethos of the first Living Dead movie, or sorry, first Evil Dead movie. Because it's all DIY.
What's the best B horror? I'm sorry, the best B movie there is, M.
The best B movie there is. Ooh, do you have an answer? I need to think.
Well, yeah, I'll throw out a couple. The Room is a great movie. I mean, it really
Oh.
is absolutely hilarious and weird. Danzig, well, Danzig's first movie, what was it called? What was it called? Damn.
Was
What
it
the
the
what was that first
vampire
Danzig movie?
one or like the
No, that's the
Western?
second one.
Oh, okay, got
The
it.
Western Vampire one is the second one. The first one is called
Got it.
Veronica, which honestly,
Yes.
like, isn't as it's people they said it's the Room of horror movies. No, it's not. It's bad. I think it's interesting. It's bad. Well, not it's just bad. I will say the second Danzig horror movie is actually it's not good, but at least it's coherent, and so it's interesting for that. I wish he had kind of did it on a bigger scale, but I'm just talking about Danny. I'm not talking about B movies. Anyway, The Room is a great B movie. Let's see. Let me think of one other one that's good. I mean, Rocky Horror Picture Show is a
Oh
B movie,
yeah.
but it doesn't feel like it because it's so well done. You know what I mean?
Rocky Horror
Oh,
rules.
I am
What?
Toxic Avenger.
Oh my
Toxic
God,
Avenger.
Toxic Avenger. How do we
How could
forget
we miss
about
Toxic
Toxic
Avenger?
Avenger? No.
What
And
once when my friends and I were in high
yeah.
school, we went and saw Toxic Avenger 4, and we were thinking
Yes.
about taking some girls with us, and we didn't. And we went, and we saw it, and we're like, "Thank God we did not take girls to see this movie." Like, if you ever want to go out with a girl or kiss a girl ever again, do not show her Toxic Avenger 4 because she will look at you and say, "Oh my God, this person is stupid and perverted." Like, oh man, I gotta say. Toxic Avenger 1 and 4. I love how they're offensive. I love how they're. I don't know if they're funny or not, but they're so bad they're funny. But
Yeah.
I will say there is one type of. Well, actually, Toxic Avenger 4 actually is almost genuinely perverted in a lot of areas, and
Oh
I'm not
yeah.
into that, Frank. But also, like, when they make fun of mentally handicapped people, like that had like, in the 80s people did that a lot, but like. That has aged really. Like some of the jokes are 80s
Yeah.
jokes and they're still funny, but that is just like it's like I don't want to watch. Like I don't want to make them. I don't want to watch them make fun of some mentally handicapped person. Like that's not funny anymore. Not even then, you know.
Oh, for
But like I
sure.
say, Toxic Avenger 1, Sergeant Kabuki Man was okay. I'm trying to think of. I know that.
Night of
Whoa,
the
actually,
Demons.
I've never seen that one.
You've never seen Night of the Demons? You haven't seen
No.
Angela's dance? She dances to Stigmata Martyr by Bauhaus.
I don't even know how they afforded that if it's a B movie.
It's so good. Sorry, continue.
But The number one, well, actually, another great low budget. It's not considered to be a movie, but it really is Harder They Come with Jimmy Cliff. Although everyone says that's such a great movie, and it is, it's great to watch, but it is really hard to follow along, even if you put on subtitles. Like, the scenes don't make sense. Like, it's shot pretty poorly. But the number one greatest B horror movie of all t B movie of all time, and I mean it's genuinely good. M you
Which one are you going for?
know what it is? Can
No, which one?
you hear me?
Yep, you just came back.
Yeah, I really stole my thunder. I stole my little thunder. Anyways, the number one greatest B movie of all time, uncontested, is Gwar, without question, Gwar Thousand in Wonderland.
What? Wait.
Gwar Thousand in Wonderland. The band Gwar, M.
They did a movie?
Gwar has literally done dozens of movies.
That's cool. I have to look this up. I have to
It's
watch
great.
this. I have not
It's
watched
freaking great.
this. Oh my God.
So I think there's four Gwar
That is
feature-length films.
perfect.
There's Gwar Thousand Wonderland. There's Gwar Dr. Skullhead Face. There's Gwar It's Sleazy, and then I'm forget. Those are the three ones that are sort of in continuity. But then there's Bloodbath and Beyond, which isn't really a feature-length film. So it's those three, I guess. I think I'm forgetting. I mean, and there's a bunch of live shows that tell a story within the live show. But yeah, Gwar's awesome. Anyway, Enmore, what's your pick for the very best B movie film?
The very best B movie film. Ooh, that's the thing. There are so many. Because it's what do you classify as one? You
Pick
know?
one, Em. Pick one.
I'm gonna have to give it to Night of the Demons right now. Because
Fair enough. What, what's
it's
that?
great.
I didn't, what's that about? I don't know anything about that. What's that about?
So a girl called Angela. Throws a Halloween party that her friends will never forget at this abandoned house. So it's her, one of her actual friends, somebody she's kind of friends with, and then like the horror movie tropes, like there's a jock and all this kind of stuff, who she doesn't like, and she's going to get revenge on them by possessing herself with a demon and attacking them in this house, and things go awry. Ooh, but do you count Evil Dead as a B movie? Because Evil Dead is also up there. Night of the
That's the
Demons is really
question.
good.
I mean, Evil Dead was a B movie, but then it
Yeah.
became so popular and it, well, so
That's the
the question
thing.
is, what's a B movie? First of all, a B
They
movie has to have
live.
a low budget, right? So
Yeah.
a B movie has to be low budget, but then also, is a B movie still a B movie if it's well done? And is a B movie still a B movie if it makes a lot of money? You know what I mean? I think a true B movie is low budget, is not that well done, and doesn't make a ton of cash.
Well, yeah, because like there's so many that have, kind of blown up, like Rocky Horror and
What was the movie about a Blair Witch Project, which became huge?
Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't like that movie.
Yeah, I know, but it was made for like 5,000 bucks and sold millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Because like all the found footage things too, right? Like Wreck and
Right.
Cloverfield, I think. What? Or
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah.
Cloverfield costs millions of dollars to make, though. You know, Blair Witch
Oh,
Project
that's
costs like
true.
10,000 bucks.
Yeah. No, it's cool. There's so many. Just so many.
So is your answer Evil Dead, M, or is it Night of the Demons?
I'm gonna go Night of the Demons just because a lot of people have heard of Living Dead.
Well,
Or
there you
sorry,
have it.
Evil Dead.
And
Jesus Christ.
wait, so you're going with Evil Dead or you're going with Night of the
I'm
Demons?
going with Night of the Demons. No, I
You
messed
know,
up.
I was Not to drag this out, I was always kind of bummed out that Ghoulies was not nearly as good as it could have been. Same with Clowns, Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh,
And that, like, Ghoulies obviously is like a Gremlins ripoff, you know?
yeah.
But I feel as though, like, they could have done a, like, they should just make Gremlins with, like, these little creatures. But instead, it's got, like, this whole plot, and the creatures don't really do that much. Whereas in, like, Gremlins, the evil, well, is Gizmo a gremlin? No, he's a Mogwai. And the gremlins are gremlins. And so, like, Gremlins is so great because these creatures just running around, like, killing people and causing havoc, and it's great. Whereas in Ghoulies, they just kind of like kill you, and there's like no comedy, or there's no. The fact that they're tiny creatures is almost irrelevant, you know? Whereas in Gremlins, like, the fact that they're little, like, energetic creatures makes the killing and the action that much more fun, you know?
Oh,
Similarly,
yeah.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Is
Yeah.
to me that's kind of a letdown because even though they're clowns, it's almost arbitrary in that like they're a race of clowns, but they don't really do anything that's clowny. They're just monsters that look like clowns. I feel as though there should have been a bigger connection to clownage, if you will.
Well, they do store people in cotton candy. That's kind of clowny.
I guess I just always thought they should be funnier, like
Yeah.
ghoulishly funnier. I wish they did like ghoulishly funny pranks. They just kill people, you know what I mean? I wish they did
Yeah.
stuff like, you know, like the squirting flower or whatever. Like, I wish they did clowny pranks to people. I feel like it was like a lost
Yes.
opportunity. And another one is that movie, who's the evil Santa Claus? What's he called?
The Krampus?
Krampus. The movie Krampus, another big letdown, you know,
Oh, I didn't
because
see it.
Well, don't. Well, you can if you want to. No, I won't ruin it then. It had this huge build up and it was just okay. Like that's the problem is like a lot of these B horror movies have great premises and then it's just a generic film. Whereas I feel as though if they really execute on the premise, like Gremlins, maybe they could have went from a B movie to an actually awesome movie. You know,
They Live is a
I
pretty
guess
good
let
one.
less is Hellraiser a B movie? How much did that movie cost to make?
I don't think
We'll
so.
take
I
a
think
look.
it was pretty expensive for the effects and stuff.
Let's take a look, and then we'll wrap this one up.
Because there are some
M,
like
do you know what the but
sequels. Sorry?
M, do you know what the budget for Hellraiser was?
I'm gonna guess $6 million.
Let's see. The budget for Terminator 1, which was actually, I think Terminator 1 is kind of a B film. Let's see what the. I realize we're dragging this out, but I'm really interested in B movies right now for some reason. Let me see what the budget for Terminator 1 was, because I believe Terminator 1 is 1984.
Okay,
Six
yes.
million budget, and that was a very low budget.
Sure.
And Hellraiser is 1987. When did Home Alone come out? That's around 1987. Oh, that's 1990. All right, 1990. Budget for Home Alone in 1990, $18 million. It is crazy that the budget for Home Alone was $18 million. You can't even get a movie off the ground these days for less than like 150 million. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Like,
for sure.
what's a movie that just came out? The Barbie movie. I realize that's a massive blockbuster. Budget of Barbie the movie, 140 million.
Oh my
Actually, that's not
God.
that crazy because I think Terminator 2 was 100 million, you know. So, what's one other movie that came? I don't even know the movie that came out these days. At any rate, I'm dragging this out. And budget for Hellraiser 1. $1 million, but I guess that doesn't count
Oh,
as a B movie. I think if you're in the millions, I think if you're in the millions, it doesn't count as a B movie, at least back then. Maybe now, you know.
yeah. No, I think that
So anyway,
disqualifies it.
the correct answer is Guar, Phallus in Wonderland, best B movie. And any last words before we wrap this one up?
Go watch some B movies. There's so many great ones. Don't forget the sequels to like great franchises too, like some of the later Nightmare on Elm Street, some of the later Friday the 13th, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but like pretty much every Hellraiser is terrible except for the first one. You know what I mean? Hellraiser 1 is so good, and all the other ones are just garbage. They really are. I mean, Hellraiser 4, I guess, is okay, maybe.
I haven't seen anything really past the first one. I want to watch them because I know kind of, I just want to see what they're about.
Well, there you have it. As Dem says, go watch some B horror movie films. And we will see you next week, where we might do Night of a Thousand Games, or we might push it back a week. Although I'm thinking we actually might do Night of a Thousand Games next week, because
Ooh.
Next week I'm relatively open, but the problem is we just got to schedule everybody in. So we'll see. Anyways,
Sounds good.
see you next week. Oh, and what song should we close them out with? We only played one song so far.
Let's close out with Half Past Two, You in a Suit.